You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
So I bet you don't even need to know any of our songs out there except for these boys in the front here, right? Well, we got a video for this next one back in the States called Kingpin. Figure that one out. With the poker face down, I never thought that you give the artist being on the man. Well, if you don't, I think you should shake his hand in a modern day Robin Hood. Yeah, kick it, bro. Yeah, kick it, bro. Yeah, kick it, bro. Go! Poking on the wire, rich kids always hire.
Welcome to Axe to Grind, the hardcore podcast. I'm Patrick.
I'm Bob.
And I'm Tom.
And gentlemen, do you open your blinds during the day?
I stay leaving them open.
Yeah, keep them open.
I live high.
Okay. The reason I ask is I opened my brother's blinds. He lives in Hollywood on the first floor. And he acted like I shit in his living room.
Because they can see in now.
Well, but here's my thing. Patty ain't scared. Who's out there? Who's the big bad man out there? I'm not scared.
That's the same reason I don't like eating outside.
I hate eating outside. That's for animals. But I'm saying
the same thing. They're seeing into your safe place.
That's his position. But my position is
I back it.
I'm safe wherever I'm at. Look in my window.
I don't think he's worried about his safety. I think it's just like, it's intrusive.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I can be weird. I don't like people, like, if you can see my computer screen, I can't function. I can't work. I can't do anything.
Good fucking God. I can be weird. Proclamation of the year. We got you, Hollywood. Team Tim, let's go. Let's go.
But I want these blinds open. There's a reason to live in Southern California, and closed blinds are not it.
I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree. But I will say, you know, he's been in his spot for a minute.
Yep.
So he's probably seen some things and there might be a reason for the blinds. So,
I mean, there is a woman who wears a dirty sundress and a purge mask every single day.
Mm. And he doesn't want her walking in. That's weird. I don't know. What an asshole.
I love LA. When Easton and I did our cross-country drive and we stayed with Pat and Eric in Hollywood, woke up early in the morning, went for a walk, like 7 a.m. It was early, early. And from that walk, I mean, they were cleaning the urine off of, what is it?
Hollywood Boulevard, the walk of fame.
Hollywood Boulevard. Yeah, they were... It smelled like we were trudging through a urinal. And he since then is like, well, I like California. He loves California. He thought LA was all right, but he was like, I don't think I ever want to go back to Hollywood. He was just thrown. He just doesn't get it. He did not like it at all. I was like, ah.
Wow. Can't say I blame him.
It's a lot of urine.
I mean, when people come to like Midtown Manhattan, they're like, never again. I wouldn't want to go back to like Times Square.
Last time I was in New York City, in Manhattan, I said to Amanda, I was like, you know, I think New York City is my favorite place where it also vaguely smells like poop every few minutes. You know, like it's
yeah, pretty cool. That's a pretty fair thing. Like, it's like a great place. New York does too. New York has places that you're like, this is the like, there's parts of the city and parts of the boroughs that you're like, this is the fucking coolest place on earth. Mm-hmm. But there's some parts that suck.
And there's a lot of parts that just smell a little bit like poop.
And you know what? If you lived on the first floor of a poop-ridden street in New York, you'd probably fucking keep your blinds closed.
Yeah. That's right. That's
so,
right.
Pat, am I to believe, rumor has it in the mill, that the infamous Hollywood flophouse of Wilson and Kinlan is now gone?
You mean Skinhead Manor 2?
Yeah. Yes. No, wasn't there, what was the name you guys had? You had a funny name for it. Maybe not.
I don't know. I don't know. It is no more. I had not lived there for a while. Evan of Cosmic Joke fame had been there, and it is R.I.P. to that place. Cleaned it out the other day. Despite having left
all your stuff there.
Yeah, I just leave stuff. For anybody that's lived with me, you know that I leave you like two large boxes. Yeah,
remember when you left a bunch of tile?
Sometimes I leave a bunch of tile. Yeah,
ceramic tile. You're like, I got a plan for this.
It was linoleum. Yeah,
linoleum. Sorry. So now, well,
do you know what was the last item in the apartment?
So I don't know if anybody grabbed the juices loose the OJ Chase wall hanging.
I think that made it down. That got down. No, Tom, for your pleasure, it was the shopping cart. The shopping cart was the last thing in that.
Amazing. Someone take like your weird cot that you laid on? Did someone take the green screen? Did Evan stay in LA?
Evan is in Van Nuys now.
Oh, okay.
So for everyone outside of LA, yes, he stayed in LA.
Yeah, I mean that. Yeah, to me, I'm like, does that mean he's not in LA? I don't really.
The Valley, yeah.
I know. Well, our Valley listeners are going to take on Bridge. It's the Valley.
Yeah. I mean, if it's a different thing, I mean, I know that's like where God's hate is from. I don't know. Like, if you like put that on, like, if you put me in a map, I wouldn't know where the hell I was going.
San Fernando Valley is part of LA County. LA County is just one big metroplex. So. It's all right. Until you get into Orange or Conejo, and I will give some exclusions. If someone referred to Long Beach as LA, I'd feel a little weird about it. If someone referred to Pasadena as purely LA, I'd start getting a little weird. But if you're talking to someone out of state and you live in Pasadena, you'd be like, yeah, I live in LA.
It's 100%.
Yeah.
Got it.
Guys, before we get into it, let's say thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to Convulse Records.
Canoga Park.
Canoga Park.
Canoga. Yeah,
this is Mr. Chattanooga over here. Thank you to Run for Cover Records.
Creamy Nougat.
Echo Park.
Echo Park.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good, like, loaded nachos dish at a vegan spot. Thank you to Close Casket Activities.
Roz Bowl Parade.
And thank you to Live a Lie.
Tom, what do you got? Let's see.
Campton.
Let's go.
So
pretty good.
Today we're going to talk to you about our friends at Closed Casket Activities, closedcasketactivities.com, or perhaps we could say closedcasketactivities.com. Tom, take it away.
What's up? I was going to sell Silver Lake was the one I was trying to think of Silver Lake, but I couldn't think of the name. So we're in Albany, we're in Troy, and I'm going to point you to the newest, it's not, no longer a new record, but the newest Judiciary record, Flesh and Blood. A longtime favorite of the podcast. Just did a full US with Tsunami, Momentum, and Kubla Khan. That went incredibly well. Played Starland Ballroom over the weekend in front of, like, I think a trillion people, it looked like. This record's great. If it's heavy, it's thrashy. I think I'm psyched to see where they go next. Tour-wise and recording-wise, great bunch of dudes. I love the cover of this record. I think this is, you know, I think they were kind of underrated for a while, and I think they're finally going to sort of get the attention and the props they deserve. And it's called Flesh and Blood is the record.
Hell yeah. Yo, this is a band who is not slept on by a lot of people, but maybe slept on by certain groups of people. I think it's on the heavier side, yes, but if you like some of the thrashier stuff, you're going to find some riffs on this record. It is riffy. So give it a whirl. closedcasketactivities.com. To Live a Lie, tolivealie.com. Click on that web store. I'm talking fast because it's To Live a Lie, baby. What you're going to do today is you're going to click on that web store and you're going to click on new releases. And I'm cluing you. I'm hyping you. I'm nudging you. I'm giving you the wink and the nudge. A lot of people really got amped up about the Code 7 Division of Labor LP reissue that To Live a Lie took care of. It sold out very quickly. Hey, To Live a Lie has a few copies with damaged covers available. So if you missed it, go get it. It's in the store. Probably if you wait too long, it won't be there, but it's there right now. And additionally, this one I'm actually really excited. The Violencia Viviendo Tiempos on Mos Oscuros LP is available now. First pass, way gone. The new repress, which is 300 on mixed vinyl, 200 clear with pink splatter. So that's the label and band exclusive, are currently available in their web store. So go get that. Fast Hardcore, spiritual successor of Los Crudos, is one of the ways it's kind of described in this. And I think that's true. I feel weird comparing things to Los Crudos, especially things that are fast hardcore in Spanish, in Espanol. But this is just a great fast hardcore punk band who some friends did some gigs with out west and said they were stealing the show every night. So Violencia, get this record. You will not be disappointed. To LiveAlive.com. Guys, how you doing? How you feeling?
I'm good. That's kind of a tough one, because obviously the easy reach is Crudos, so you don't want to do it. But then it might also be accurate.
Most appropriate.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Sometimes shit puts you in a weird position where you're like, do I have to be smarter than the room and try to think of a comparison other than this? And that's why we get paid the big bucks.
Well, and you know what? And I was like, you know what? If they're comfortable throwing that in the description, I'll roll with it. But yeah, no, it's don't outsmart the room sometimes. Guys, I'm doing a new thing because, Tom, did you know we're the hardcore podcast?
I mean, yeah, that's what I've heard.
And Patrick, did you know that what's one of the main things we talk about on here?
Politics.
not geography, no. not
mall, weird malls in somewhere in central New York.
Yeah, we do cover that.
Basement
that
apartments and the such. No, we talk about hardcore. So this is going to be something I'm going to try to do. It's called Hard and Fast. I'm going to just give you three things. We can talk about it. Two things coming out. One, I believe, might be out, maybe coming soon. Tom, what's the band? Contention. This is my number one, Contention. New record. It is, what's it called? Eden something? I'm pulling it up. Contention. It's on Days.
Artillery from Heaven.
Okay. Yes. And the single. That's right. Yes. Artillery from Heaven. The new single, Ousted from Eden, is streaming. They got it in the Land of Nod. So, yo, this is, would you call this metallic hardcore? Metalcore? I don't know. It is metallic,
yeah,
but it's got that's enough
hardcore.
Yeah, it's got enough speed for me. It's got a little bit more of, it's got some chug, and it's got more of a metallic hardcore metalcore breakdown, some breaks, but the vocals are really ripping, so it has the urgency I capital N need when hardcore gets this way for me. But I think this is awesome. I saw it everywhere for a minute. I don't want it to get lost in the sauce. This record's going to be great. Shout out to Days. Shout out to Contention. Come down 2 weeks. Yep. Shout out to Contention. I think this is going to be a great record. I believe this is a Florida band, correct? Tampa?
That's correct.
Tampa.
Sort of an FYA last year.
Hell yeah. All right. So everyone should go check out
the metalcore that I like.
Right. And this is the metalcore. This is the metalcore that I like when it hits a certain threshold. And I think this easily clears that threshold. It's very, very good. So everyone should check it out. Really good new hardcore record. I'd love to see them gain some traction. I'd love to see them tour a little bit. Second one, totally different world. Alienator, one of my favorite hardcore records from last year. Maybe the best hardcore 7-inch from last year. It was World of Hate. They have a new 7-inch coming out called Time to Die on Unlawful Assembly. Comes next year, week, the 29th, I guess. If you like any of the stuff on Convulse, if you like any of the 11 p.m. record stuff, if you like any of the Unlawful Assembly, this is hard enough that I think me and homie Keith from Restraining Order were trying to pin down what it sounded like. There's elements of Life's Blood in it. It's just hard, fast, hardcore. The cover of the first 7-inch, I think, tells it all. It is a weird dude who looks like his face is made out of worms behind a brick wall, and then another dude kicking a dude in the face with a boot in front of a city skyline. It's like perfect. What else do you want from this?
This is very Life's Blood cover.
Correct. Right. Yeah. So kicking society in the face. So two very different records, but that I think everybody should keep their ears out for. Go try to hear those things. And the third thing on Hard and Fast, and I want to put this out to you, Tom. Did you, as a kid, young fella, younger yes. person, have flyers on the wall of your room?
Yes, I did.
Now, I ended up at some point, I think I wallpapered my room with various things out of like Slam magazine, comic book magazines, and punk and hardcore flyers. It was a pretty cool room. I should find some pictures of it. But I also knew people who just had a couple flyers on their wall. Patrick had a couple show listing flyers on the wall, right, on his wall, right?
Step Up Presents. Shout out to Teddy Tall, who Tom, you can picture the show bill in your the flyers in your mind, correct?
He had such a distinct
yep.
thing. It would be like Step Up Presents, a picture of the headlining band, and then the whoever was playing in the same typeface below it. And then on the bottom.
So you're thinking of the actual flyers. And those were
Are you talking the long thing?
Yes. Yes.
I can also picture that quite well.
Can you describe it to people at home? Because now they're everybody, this is aging us quite a bit, but there was a time before the internet. And conveying the most information to people in the fastest way possible was a challenge and a sport unto itself. And while this is going to sound so goddamn simple, when I would travel out of town, other scenes did not do this. And I was always shocked at how simple a solution this one thing was.
Tom? You know what? It's funny. I found one right now by Googling. And it ran from Saturday, August 24th through Tuesday, November 26th, all the stuff that they had booked so far. I'll give you some of the shows just to kind of pat at some of these. August 24th, Saratoga Winners, Skinless, Disciples of Berkowitz, Traumacide, Thunderhead, Irate.
Wow.
Then we go Friday, August 30th, Diecast, Endicott, Bloodlet, Written in Stone.
Yep.
September 7th, Marauder, Hudson River Bottom Nightmare Band.
Oh, yeah.
The Promise, Morning World. September 8th, the next day, Candiria, 40 Below Summer, Last Call, Raja. Here's one, Pat, that maybe only me and you will... I popped when I saw this. So the opening band, Open Hand. You remember them on Truskill? Great band. Liars Academy.
Okay.
Fairweather, also another great band.
Okay, a lot of EVR on this band.
So local that you only... people that live in Albany will get this. F. Timmy.
Oh, God. I don't want to tell too many F. Timmy stories out of school, but can I deliver one?
And yeah, so this is F-Timmy with a T-I-M-M-I, which was a Howard Stern reference.
Yep. And if I can, I've told the story. I'll just kind of expose these guys. I don't know them. No disrespect to the Timmys. But this was, you know, pop punk band and had a following in Albany, very far removed from anything I had exposure to, but had a following. And they are the band that believes that they did not get signed because of 9/11. They went to the city, took some meetings, and 9/11 happened immediately after.
And you know what's fucking crazy? The flyer that I'm looking at, the show, Wednesday, September 11th.
Holy shit.
And I think 9/11 was a Tuesday. So this might have been the year after.
It was the year after because I was trying to think why I was not at any of these shows. It's because I was living in New York. Go on.
We got Boy Sets Fire, Glassjaw, Haste, Christensen, Hatebreed, 6 Feet Under, Death Threat, Mastodon. Here's one out of left field on this. So you're like September 21st, Hatebreed, 6 Feet Under, Death Threat, Mastodon. Thursday, September 26th, the Indigo Girls. Tuesday, October 8th, the Damned.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then it was like, today's the day, Midtown. Like, these were all separate shows. Thursday.
Yo, I mean, listen, Albany was popping at one point.
Dude, in 2002, it was fucking insane.
I mean, it was mid-sized shows. Albany had like a great mid-sized show sort of vibe for a number of years.
Yes.
And not a lot of shit I would go to be honest. But I mean, Alive, you know what I mean? A lot, enough going on that you
people
could be
going to live music. No.
Yeah.
So that's a great, this is why I'm doing this, is so we can have some fun tangents too. The point of my original bringing up flyers is I don't think people make physical flyers like they used to.
No.
I see plenty of really cool looking Instagram flyers and like digital images and all that. That's all neat. Flyers used to serve this purpose of being a free thing that you could have, that you would put on your wall. You'd be like, that's fucking cool. Look at this. This is something I'm into. That is quietly we're losing that piece of punk, hardcore, whatever music, because it was something that didn't cost money. You didn't have to be consuming it. You didn't have to pay to fucking have a flyer. But it was still this weird expression point where people using it to make art. I saw someone, I think it was Scotty from Tank Crimes, shout out to him, who was talking about, hey, like, this is a way for artists to get out there.
Yeah.
You like punk music and you do art, make some cool flyers. Someone's going to see it and, oh shit, I need this dude to do art for my demo, art for my record, art for my whatever it is, my shirt. Yo, you might get nothing. You might just make some cool ass flyers. Patrick, I know you've made a ton of flyers in your life.
Sure.
Fun.
I enjoy it. When I have the time, I enjoy it very much.
Very fun.
I mean, think about even like the early aughts, like Bob will know, like AN, like Linus, like their flyers were like artwork. Like I hung yes. like in a frame. I had a fucking MPB American Nightmare flyer that, yes. or one of them, like, cause it was so cool. And everyone was different.
That's right. And like, look, on a funny, weird thing, old punk flyers are super collectible. So collectible. It's so weird to me. It's cool. You know what? I have a bunch of old flyers that I got photocopies of 20 something years ago. That's cool. I converted them all to PDFs now. But the point is, when I was a kid, those were like an identifier for me. When I was a teenager, I hung that shit in my bedroom because that's what I was into. And I didn't have to spend any money for it. Good Lord. The magazines that I had stuff ripped out of, I probably stole from Kmart. So, like...
Right. And think about it. Like, when we had Jules on all those years ago, remember when we were talking about certain shows, and he's like, how did you guys know about this? I'm like, because that flyer was like the fucking Mona Lisa.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So these are cultural points. And, yo, you know, digital versions, that's cool. They can exist. 100%. You need them to. You need them to at this point. And you might say, well, where am I even to put flyers? I don't know. Bring them to a show and put them on a table. I'm not even telling you to be the dude handing them to people. Put them on a table so people can grab them. Bring them to a record store and drop them. Tape one to a window or put it at a coffee store. Whatever it is, I'm saying this only because it just makes things cooler. Full stop. That's it. So that was my three hard and fast. Check out Contention. Check out Alienator. Make more flyers. Hardcore.
Goddamn right.
Guys, we're not the we sadly talk about things when people pass. We don't dwell on it. But this one's a big one. And mostly because we want to, as a friend would say, celebrate a life. So let's take a minute and say RIP to Eddie Sutton, Eddie from Leeway. And let's spend a lot of time celebrating a true, unique character and creator in the punk, hardcore, metal space.
Yeah, I mean, like, I talk about this, like, we talk about this all the time, and I've had this conversation with friends. It's like, you know, hardcore will go on forever, you know what I mean? And, like, there'll be new people and all this sort of stuff. But, like, right. that, like, 10 years or so of New York hardcore, like the absolute characters.
Yeah.
That came out of that, you know, fucking square, like square mile.
Yeah.
Or, you know, with the story, but even like just in the Lower East Side of like where all these bands kind of came up, like you could write books. Like these people are fucking like you could have movies that like, you know, Eddie Sutton and Stigma fucking about Eddie Sutton and Stigma, because they were such like New York characters.
Yes.
That like, I feel like we're talking about flyers going by the wayside. I feel like the characters that these dudes were and are, I feel like that kind of, you know, they don't exist anymore. Like that era of New York, you know, at large and in hardcore, just doesn't exist anymore. And I think, you know, Eddie was definitely one of the fucking characters, like an incredibly talented dude.
Yeah.
Like probably, I mean, like, you know, I think we, you know, he gets underrated sometimes, like probably one of the more talented dudes that ever came out of New York hardcore.
Yeah. No,
like vocally and stuff. Like he was doing shit that like, nope, you know, like, people were like, oh, you sound like the guy from Anthrax. Sometimes you sound like Ozzy. I'm like, that's pretty sick.
Yeah, and to be in the same world as a lot of us know. So shout out to everyone who was touched by it. I actually was happy to see such a universal outpouring of appreciation for Leeway. Tell me this. Do you guys think Leeway is in conversations in New York hardcore, but I am of the opinion that they should be vaulted higher up and more conversation be had about them because of their influence, not just on the style, but the sound. And like when you go back and listen, Born to Expire, okay, right. That record comes out. I think we did a whole thing about this. Born to Expire actually comes out way later than it should have. It was recorded in like
87. It came out in 89 or something.
Yes, crazy. That's right. But if you go back and you listen to the Leeway Enforcer demo, which is 85, metal leads, they're doing crossover, but in this really specific way. And what they are able to do on both Born to Expire and then Desperate Measures is like, look, I said off air, I was like, I don't know if Eddie Sutton ever considered himself a punk, but he was in the hardcore. He certainly considered himself in the hardcore. And what Leeway did in terms of bringing punk and metal and hardcore together and fusing them, and it not being a clone of Suicidal, and it not being a clone of COC, and it not being a clone of DRI, and not being a clone of Cro-Mags. If you want my full, like, I just did some listening, was thinking about them. Tom, I think Leeway is more the root of a more metallic New York hardcore sound than Cro-Mags. Because if you listen to Born to Expire, or you listen to the Enforcer demo, and then you listen to Breakdown, and you listen to Raw Deal, and then you specifically listen to Brightside by Killing Time, you go, oh.
That's different.
Yeah, you're like, oh, okay, these things, okay, this all makes sense to Leeway. It doesn't make sense so much to Cro-Mags, other than Cro-Mags being, yeah, they were heavy and they had some metal, but they were still punk. Leeway has more sonic cues that I would tie into those bands that then beget a lot more. So I don't know, man. I think they're perhaps under-discussed, and
which is mind-blowing.
Right, like they should be. They never had the Cro-Mags moment, right? That where Patrick, you understand this, you were a victim of it in the way where you thought the Cro-Mags were whatever, but you had to endure a long time where people just talked about them at God level because, hey, Tom, Cro-Mags, pretty fucking great, other than their internet presence. Leeway never had that moment. Is that right?
Never in my sphere.
I mean, they were big back, like,
oh,
before, you know what I mean? They never had like that renaissance, maybe.
That's right.
That's what I'm talking about. Like they were, you know, vaunted. Like it was a thing that people respected, but when all the kids started doing bands in the early 2000s, like that, nobody was talking about Leeway in my spaces. You know what I mean? Now I understand a lot of kids in Texas will be like, no, Leeway was one of the conversation starters early, but was not where I was at. It was just another one of those New York bands that you had to pay respect to, but people were not ripping off.
I mean, and having been there in like throughout the 90s in New York.
Yeah.
Like post like 94, like there's a lot of revisionist history, unfortunately. Like,
yep.
I went to a lot more, and this is no disrespect, because I mean, Leeway is literally that, like Leeway and Killing Time are like the two from, they're both goated.
Yes.
I went to a lot of like half crowded Leeway and Warzone shows.
Yeah.
In the '90s that now like, Warzone became like this thing, and Rabies obviously iconic, but it's like, they weren't necessarily getting their flower as like mid career, like Leeway did the famous like quickness tour with Bad Brains and all this sort of stuff. And they were popping, and like, they got fucked by their record company, like that dude Chris Williamson, who did Rock Hotel, allegedly didn't do well by them, and they kind of got screwed on a lot of those things. Then they put out records that I thought were pretty great, but at the time, people were not ready for Adult Crash or Open Mouth Kiss.
Right.
Because I think people listen to it now, they're like, these are kind of great. And I'm like, well, yeah, but like, it's the equivalent of like, you're not going to follow up fucking Desperate Measures. No one's going to be psyched on whatever you do.
No, but
it's like following the bright side. What are you going
to
do?
I re-listened to it and I was like, oh, like Open Mouth Kiss and Adult Crash. I'm like, I can see bridging here if somebody likes Life of Agony and likes, Only Living Witness. Does Adult Crash sound like that? Does Open Mouth Kiss? Not exactly, but I can see it bridging and it being like, oh, somebody could backdoor into classic New York hardcore through this. It's a halfway. And I don't know how much I want to admit this, but the last time I listened to Open Mouth Kiss, I was like, oh, this is not horrendous. Like I definitely thought it was when I was a kid. It's got a lot of cool elements. And I think it's more in line with a lot of music that's going on now in hardcore. You know what I mean?
Where songs came off live. Like if you were there to see them, like play those songs, like, I hadn't seen Leeway in a minute, but like, I don't think they play a lot of that stuff. But like when those records were like the new things they were playing off of, like the big songs like came off, man. People would kind of like, they those songs, I mean, they didn't do as well as fucking Ball Hug or whatever, but like they definitely did okay. But I think that was, it was a different band. Michael Gibbons wasn't, there were a four piece.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was like a different thing. And I think it was like post Quicksand.
Yep.
That, an Orange Eye Millimeter, and like everyone kind of went that sort of post hardcore direction to an extent.
Yeah. Well, and just like the alternative wave, they were experimenting with what was on the other side of the radio dial there,
Well, I also want to talk about the fact that I listened to Desperate Measures today, and I think that's more like way more post-hardcore than my memory served, and way more post-hardcore than anybody gives it credit. I mean, it's to my ear, it's like slow burn. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's got like these really bizarre, kind of like reaching for post hardcore, but still, like a metal guitarist. Yep. I was tripping out on it today, because Born to Expire is what, I lived with Eric, so it's like what played in my house daily, but the, Desperate Measures, I really had not revisited in at least a few years, and I was really gobsmacked, if I can be vulgar.
What was it, 1950s when you heard it?
Yeah,
I was really gobsmacked.
I gave a nickel and I bought this on vinyl.
I want to do a little. Give me a year on that. Do you fellas know off the top of your head?
Yeah, 1991.
It's 91. It was recorded, I think, in 89. 90. Okay, yeah.
It's 90. Okay.
It's so another one of those things. Yeah.
Contemporaneous would be what would have been?
Burn.
So, yeah.
Burn. Quicksand. 7-inch. Inside Out.
And the thing is, if you ask me, they were arriving at some similar places, but like Leeway is roots groove metal. They were playing with rhythms and stuff, and they don't get to what we think of when we think of 90s groove metal. But, like, you know, listen to some of Open Mouth Kiss, listen to some of Adult Crash. They go way more melodic than you'd imagine for that. But, like, I saw, I think, shout out to James Kay, who said this, I think, which I don't totally agree with him, but he was saying he's taking Desperate Measures over Born to Expire, which, again, I actually respect that as an opinion, but he was saying that he thinks they, Born to Expire, they were just working out things and they landed the plane with Desperate Measures.
I might agree.
Is this Agent Quarrel versus Best Wishes?
No, it's right. No, it's not quite. It's similar though. No, because Tom, I think I actually land to this. Age of Quarrel feels like a complete document, and it's what the Chromags were going for. And then with Best Wishes, they wanted to go more metal, and so they went more metal. With Leeway, I think they were in their pocket with Born to Expire, where it was like, hey, it's got these fast, like, they gallop the drums so much. I don't know the drummer of Leeway's name, but
Pokey.
Right.
Different drummer, though. The drummers change between records.
And Pokey, you can tell. Pokey's just...
he's unbelievable.
He's unbelievably so fast. He's got this perfect gallop drum. Oh my God. With Desperate Measures, maybe that's an element on the recording. They just are going for something a little different. They're pulling back and going, yeah, we got all our fast stuff on Born to Expire. And it's not that there's not fast stuff on Desperate Measures. It's just
Pokey's on
time.
Desperate Measures. I'm sorry. I was confusing what you were saying.
Okay. Well, the way that I see Leeway is that I think Desperate Measures, they always had a metal passion, right? Like, you can tell, and we'll cite it, but they express it differently by Desperate Measures. They're definitely like painting outside the lines even more than they were. Like, it's so hard to explain it, but it's like what Leeway was doing, there was no true form for. Like, I wouldn't call them crossover other than to say in a 6-word on a flyer description, like NYC crossover kings. Cool, sure. But they're not crossover like we think of crossover.
No. You know what I mean? Particularly not on Desperate Measures.
No, because they have so much more rhythm. That's the big thing. And that's what I think separates them. It makes me think of them like, okay, when we talk about like 80s New York hardcore and whatever, there's a certain rhythm to it and groove and like kind of vibration to it that gets expressed best through when you can feel it on thudding weird mosh parts, like dun 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 dun. It's like breakdown. This breakdown with the sound of the guitars, with the riffs they're playing, with the energy of the band, with a dude who looks like he's going to hit you with a billy club on stage, do they have any right having this level of rhythm they do? No. Chromags, a mix of Motorhead and Discharge, but they hit these weird groove parts in their slower songs where people are vibing. Leeway has that in spades, and it's done with such bravado. Like, I was listening, like, Mark of the Squealer, when it comes back, it's like the song is longer than it should be, but it's not, because the entire second, like the entire last like minute is done as that sneak, like ha ha boom boom doo reprieve where it just hits you. And like that, there's so much personality and rhythm that you can't get in anything else other than like the Top of the Pops New York stuff. And I think it's hard for people to identify it unless you start pointing it out in those kind of things. Like, you can hear, like, breakdown shouldn't be as rhythmic as they are, but they just are. And I think they all learned those things from being from New York, from taking influences outside of punk, but also saying, well, but the Bad Brains are kind of fucking rip. but otherwise, like, if you told me the guitarist of Leeway had barely heard much punk music except for like Bad Brains and maybe some of the fast, like
Kraut.
Like, yeah, right.
From a story, of course. AJ DeVello definitely knows. Yeah.
And I mean, that's a dude who definitely knows punk and hardcore music, but it's so.
The rest good. Of the dudes are metalheads.
Right. And you hear those leads, like, ah, oh, man. Tom, Patrick identified this. Leeway in Upstate was just a band you nodded at. I'm sure they had plenty of diehard fans, all that. In Brooklyn, Leeway was a godhead, correct?
I mean, they were like, for my generation of hardcore kids around that time, probably, you know, like, and a little bit older than me, and like through my age and a little younger, they were the band.
Yeah.
It wasn't Sick of It All, it wasn't Cro-Mags, it wasn't anything else, it was fucking Leeway.
Yeah. And so for me, and I'm a younger guy, I've told this story kind of, but I'll tell it more directly here. My friends were like punk kids, you know, like skinheads and punks, and a bunch of them were straight edge, and a bunch still are. But we were going to like spiky punk shows, but we also knew the Revelation catalog and classic New York records. But Leeway, it was like Calgon. It was every single, like, I loved Leeway before I heard Judge. Full stop. Like, I knew Leeway records. I knew Born to Expire and Desperate Measures before I knew the Judge 7-inch, full stop. Just the way you consume things. But it was such a thing. And when you think about my friends, like, very few of the guys I grew up with like metal or metallic hardcore in that way at all. But Leeway's the, like, Leeway and Cro-Mags. But if you ask me, Leeway is more metallic than Cro-Mags, especially the Born to Expire versus Age of Quarrel. It's not even a question to me. And we loved it. And it was just so important. And I don't know. We got emotional. I had a conversation with one of my buddies and we got kind of emotional because it was like, yo, Eddie felt like he could have been a dude in our town. He was weird. He was a personality. Look, he went through his battles, but if anything, I felt like that came through in his art and music and the way he expressed himself. And that made him unbelievably relatable, despite the fact that he was a larger than life personality and presence too, you know?
I mean, he was the original fucking hardcore B-boy.
Right. Right.
He changed. I mean, like, I think it's hard to do his impact real justice. But like, you see all these old, like, older pictures from the 80s, like, this dude was dressed in like a hip hop dude in like 88. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that comes out in the music so much. And I think like them and like Madball brought like that, like, rap kind of swagger to hardcore. Like, before that, everyone was like trying to be fucking Discharge or whatever. You know what I mean? Or whomever.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. Or like everyone would be fuck Crucifix. But I think those dudes are the ones that like really, really brought that kind of like that crossover. Like, that was the crossover almost.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's why the New York, when you talk about New York, there was such a different energy to it because it had more of that kind of influence. And so anyways.
I mean, I think them at, like, if you got to see them at, like, and this is like, I feel like I always get like cracked by, like, you know, the old guys are like, if you saw the fucking Bad Brains in 1982, you saw God or whatever. Mm-hmm. I feel like if you saw Leeway when they were on, they're still to this day one of the best bands I've ever seen.
Yeah, that is universal.
I mean, I think, you know, like, having seen them as a kid, and even like the show I always kind of bring up, they did like a two-night stand at CB's with Bad Brains with John Joseph.
Whew.
It was 06, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, I remember
first time back with Michael Gibbons. Michael Gibbons hadn't been in the band for a while.
Yeah.
And it was their first time back as like a five-piece. When I tell you that they wiped the fucking floor.
Yeah.
With the Bad Brains. Came out to fucking enforce. It was just like, you know, they had the, what's that? The good, the bad. That was like the intro music.
Yeah.
People went fucking bonk. And it was like, and having seen them as a kid when they were five piece, like around Desperate Measures.
Yeah.
Like, it was that again. They were just like so unbelievable. And I think they did stuff that is most bands can't hope to, you know, like Cro-Mags, you can hear in everybody.
Yep. Yep.
I don't think you can really hear Leeway because no one can do it.
No, there's a lot. You're right. That's why you don't get nearly as many Leeway covers as you get, even though, you know, there's elements of Cro-Mags stuff that people cheat, but there's not an attempt. But I think that I hear their influence when I've listened to it more, but not direct. It's not, yo, nobody's got, well, and nobody can do their leads. Nobody can do those, like, they just sail. And I don't know. I think song structures, there's a lot to talk about with Leeway. because it was really unique. I want to second this. I saw Leeway play some pretty thin shows. The first time I saw them, probably 2002, they played club. It was probably Club Chrome by then. Might have been Club Binet still. They played upstairs, and it was probably 40 or 50 people there. Mm-hmm. And they were great. It was really good. But it was one of those shows where you're 40 or 50 people, and, you know, that means at best there was 15 or 20 people going off in a room that probably could hold 300 people. It was like a weeknight. It was weird, but yeah, it was awesome. But I want to co-sign what you said. I heard the same things. I was actually at West when they played those CB shows, heard they smoked the JJ Bad Brains thing. But even more so, you know, shout out to my old buddy, Jeff from TDT Screen Printing, who saw Leeway on that Bad Brains 89 tour, Born to Perspire. And that's one of those hardcore lore things that was like, yo, not only did Leeway hold their own, there were nights where they were smoking Bad Brains, and that was a huge deal. Like, this is, like, I was thinking about what a big deal it is to have seen the Bad Brains in the 80s. I'm like, God damn, that's so fucking cool. But then I think about it, I'm like, yo, you see Leeway at their peak, just like titans going up there and putting on. So, Patrick, you've been quiet because, you know, me and Tom are Leeway super fans, so you've been letting us go. You said you might have some questions for us, so let's do some more Leeway talk.
Well, my questions, I mean, both of you answer, but I'd be curious how things were in Brooklyn at this time, Tom. The records, so you kind of answered when you said that the later material, the hits hit live.
Yeah. But
did Skeptics peel off at any point?
Oh yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it was almost the same as the second. What the hell is the fucking Killing Time record that I actually like? What's the second LP about?
The Method.
Yep. It was the same. I mean,
where it's good.
Very parallel track. It's kind of parallel to, you know, Adult Crash was 94. I think I forget when.
I think Method's right in there too.
94, 95. Right? Like, it's a fucking really good record. But if you're putting it against Brightside or Born to Expire or Desperate Measures, it's not, I mean, no pun intended, it's not going to measure up. It's not going to be the same.
That's right.
But like, they, you know, they still did, you know, I saw them a bunch at like Coney Island High and stuff like that, and they were still great. And I think like in the early 90s, like his style and his like matched New York perfectly, because like I was talking to my friend Mike from Inhuman, and like, we were like, in Brooklyn, everyone dressed like they were in a Cypress Hill video.
Right.
Like, everyone wore Carhartt, even though like nobody was doing like outside work. You know, everyone had sock hats.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, everyone was like living a Biohazard video. And like, everyone, you know, like, rap was so big, and like Cypress Hill and fucking House of Pain, like whatever. Yeah. Everyone tried to dress like that. And like, Leeway was like the perfect accompaniment to that, because, I mean, fucking Cat to School, Girls in Trouble on the first record, fucking Kingpin on the second record.
Yeah.
They had rap songs that weren't corny.
I mean, Kingpin is, for our listeners, if you're this deep into this podcast and you haven't stopped to listen to Leeway material that you haven't visited up to this point, you really should. But Kingpin, I mean, again, I'm sorry to just keep using the word odd, but Kingpin is fucking odd, man.
For 2 minute warning is odd.
Yes, it's.
No, that's the thing. I think they were. They just look. I said I think they had this influence on a whole track of New York hardcore that maybe the Cro-Mags were noted as like, hey, that's the band we love. So we're saying, yeah, they were an influence on us because how intense they were and all that. But if you listen to Leeway, they were just doing some more tried metal progressions. But their song structures and decisions they were making musically, one, not every vocalist could hang, and Eddie could. No. Two, you're using the right word. They're odd, and that also makes them interesting. Like, that Leeway's catalog is not going to be something that you'd be like, oh yeah, it's just like this. Like, you know, there's plenty of bands I really like that you can file away in genre, and I don't think that Leeway falls into that category at all.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast. a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of the Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, "Man, I gotta hear that." Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Chris Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.
No, I mean, I'm biased, but like, I think there, if we're talking crossover, they're the best crossover band. I would take those two records against anything.
Yeah. You know, here's the only reason that I'm going to push back on it, and I don't have a better answer. I really think it goes far away from what I consider crossover quickly, like within a record. You know, I mean, Born to Expire is crossover to my ear. Desperate Measures, not really. I mean, I don't know what else to call it, but it's, to me, it's got too many other elements in it to really think of it as crossover. I mean, maybe I just got a limited idea of crossover. I think a crossover like thrash, you know, thrash crossover, crossover thrash, yeah, like, sure. You know, but like, I think it's fair.
I mean, I think that's a fair, like, kind of assumption.
They lose the thrash as the main element pretty damn quickly.
By Desperate Measures, it's there, but it's not the focus.
Yeah.
So I don't suppose you're wrong, because particularly if we just keep Born to Expire in like a, you know, take it on its own measures, maybe. But I don't know. I just, you know, I'm no sort of Leeway super fan. But I, for our listeners, I just think it's important to put a little respect on kind of how willing to not adhere to the book the band was. And I understand they get that credit a little bit, but everybody in my life has treated it more like they stumbled into these other sounds. And maybe that's true, but they actually do it a lot of grace. Like, let's say that there's parts like, Bob, you said there's some obvious groove metal, right?
Roots, like, of it, yeah.
Let's say that we stack Desperate Measures not just against crossover, but we stack it against something early mid prong. You know what I mean? Like, if we put it against early mid prong, it really stacks. And if you
mean, does it prove you wrong, Jace?
Yeah.
It's just not as noisy and weird.
Here's, I guess, what I'm saying. You could put it on the same show as the earliest Quicksand and that first real prong record.
Yes.
And you'd almost arrive at not its influences necessarily, but a shared sound in some way. And that's not easy to pull off.
No. And like, it's a credit to their musicianship that they can go into those arenas and, like, look, they were chosen by the Bad Brains to go on tour for a reason. They had the chops. This band could rip. And I want to give, you know, to put more respect on Eddie's name as well as our Leeway homage. Dude was a performer who was going nuts on a big stage or small stage. I mean, I saw him play in a fire hall. Saw him play in a big empty club. I've seen videos of him playing to packed large rooms on big stages and just going nuts.
And it's great to, like, hear, like, the stories of, like, some folks that's, like, I'm sure Jeff has had them and, like, other friends of mine, like, yeah. You know, like, him at, like, City Gardens, like, yes. Jumping out of the fucking window,
yes,
of, like, the dressing room onto the stage. Like, dude, wore knee pads.
Yeah
Like, yo, if you were Tom, help me out. His name is Ken
Salerno.
Ken Salerno, photos from City Gardens. One, do yourself a favor and look at Ken Salerno's photos. He's incredible. One of the best hardcore photographers. Not enough people talk about him. Two, his photos of Leeway there are awesome. Awesome.
Like, you see the picture of him pointing a gun at Pokey?
Yes. Yes.
And just like him wearing baseball, like jerseys, and he just had the fucking, like, I mean, I don't know. You can't tell me anyone at that time was any cooler than him or Jimmy Gestapo.
Right. No.
You know what I mean? And I think, you know, it's sad, you know, young man, he's 59 years old, you know, and was struggling with, you know, with cancer for like 4 years or so.
Yep.
You know, and, you know, going into hospice, like, you knew, like, sadly, you know, like, yeah, once you go into hospice, you know, it's usually not a good thing.
It's a hard road, whichever way you're going. So,
yeah, you know, and I mean, he was booking shows in the future, you know, like, he booked This Is Hardcore, think, you know, with that idea that he was going to fight through it.
Yeah,
you know,
credit to Joe and being involved in that. He posted. I was just about to say,
let's give a shout out to Joe for. I when I saw it on the flyer, I said, I mean, I think I dropped it in the group chat. I said, this might be a tough one,
right?
And then I saw today. I didn't hear the podcast, but I saw a little excerpt that Joe said that he booked it with. In anticipation of good things, and if it didn't go that way, then can talk to Eddie's family about maybe alternatives. But I think that's such a good energy to
have something to look forward to, like, for that dude for 3 months out. Like, you got to keep fighting because you got a show to do, and that dude he's a performer more than anything.
You know, I don't want to get verklempt about a fellow that I never met, but.
Do it. Show some. You know,
well, you know, a couple things. Firstly, 59 is too young. You know, if you're one of our listeners who's 25, it's probably difficult to comprehend. But it's not a young man, but it's too young. So that in and of itself is a loss and upsetting. But also, I realized. I didn't know anything about this man except for what he put into the world. There's some of these other figures that I feel like I'm inundated with them. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I know more about them than I know about coworkers and shit. Correct.
Right. And, like, turn off the Wi-Fi.
Right. And I didn't, I mean, maybe I wasn't clocking for it, and there's certain places on the internet I'm not, but I didn't know a ton about Eddie Sutton as a man. And I think what you guys pointed out, and I'll you know, Tom, I think you'd say this, but I'll say it for you if you don't want to. You know, the New York dudes can be, like, real petty. Oh, yeah. They can be real stuck on old shit. And
right. You refuse to play before them in 1992.
Yes.
And 30 something years later, they're still like, fuck those dudes, rock stars.
Right. Yeah. And you'll see this when it's fun and games, right? When it's when it's dudes on Facebook threatening each other. It can be cringe.
Everyone sends screenshots in the group chat because it's funny.
Right. Yes. Right. But when it's serious, when somebody that like, I don't know that anybody disliked Eddie, but let's say that you live long enough, somebody dislikes you. None of that matters when you're on your way out, you know? And, I thought that the positivity around him, I agree with Bob on this. It was really nice, to see everybody kind of doing what you are supposed to do when someone
is easy up for hardcore elders.
That's yes. Right. Yeah. You know what? That's well put. This is what you want from 60-year-old men who you grew up admiring because of they were really good at the thing that you love. And you would like them to, they don't have to have decorum. That's never been their thing, but you know, you just don't want to see the pettiness at the wrong moment. And, I was happy to see that there was a lot of love for this man. And I don't know. I guess I'm saying I'm glad I didn't know a lot about him, because that means that he had a personal and private life that he was entitled to.
That's right.
but also it's a bit unfortunate because, you know, even if I've just met a couple dudes in passing, you still feel like you got to,
you knew them.
Yeah, you feel like you got to experience their energy in whatever respect. And, I didn't have that with Eddie, but, I don't know. I got emotional also. You know, cancer is a son of a bitch and it yeah. takes a lot out of you. And, Eddie Sutton, you can see different photos of him over the years. And he had other, you know, other health issues, whatever the hell, throughout the years. Sure. And some years he looked really good and other years he didn't look great. And then, just a couple years ago, I thought he looked like fighting shape. You know what I mean? Like just a couple years ago. And, recent photos were him very deep into a health struggle. Right. And, it really, I mean, again, not to get too emotional about a fella I didn't know, but it just brought me to a place. And you know, I guess we'll just reiterate, our hearts are with not just people that liked his music. That's nice that you liked his music, but to people who knew him, you know what I mean, you're in my thoughts today because, right. you know, we talk about it every time a notable person dies. They are more than what they put into the world. They are also somebody's son. They are somebody's father. Often they're somebody's brother,
cousin, sister. Yeah.
Yeah. And
dude like that, like they don't die.
Right. Yes.
And well, then you see it, you're like, fuck, like that dude's been part of my life more than he hasn't been.
Right.
Yeah. So that's
a great long point. Shot.
That's a great point. There's fellas that, they seem like they're never going to go away because they were here when they were already here when you arrived and they've been present in some capacity.
Entire time. Right.
And I'm not going to say any names out loud because it's almost like putting bad energy into the world. But there's a couple fellas that when they go, it's going to be flatly weird because they've never been gone.
Not been here. Like yeah. They've been here since before hardcore almost.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know. Shout out to Eddie on a life that, made an impact on a great many people. And, also, you know, shout out to his, family and friends who, his broader circle of friends who seem to be all paying the respect in the way that I would hope that they would.
Right. And I think for our podcast, especially Leeway was such a big thing. Like anyone from the shore, I feel like, Bob, is it fair to say like they were the NYHC band for most people?
Cro-Mags and them. That's it. That was it. Everything else we loved, but that right, was
but those are like, and that, I mean, I think Leeway was almost like a niche band.
Yeah.
Like everyone likes the Cro-Mags. It's like, all right, big whoops. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, you like Minor Threat? Crazy.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But like, I think Leeway had this thing that like, I feel like in a weird way, they had pockets like in Albany. They were a thing in Albany, them and the Cro-Mags.
Yeah. Yep.
In Brooklyn, obviously. And in the shore, like, you know,
Jersey for sure.
More than most places. And I think, you know, to think that like, you know, a dude that's, you know, been involved in our lives, you know, more than family, like, you know, or like been around or part of it for more, you know, it's sad to think about like that, you know, that dude was, I mean, hopefully, you know, he's not suffering anymore and not having to deal with the pains of fucking chemotherapy and radiation and everything else, you know, and it's, you know, but on a selfish level, it's like, fuck, man. Like it's so fucking, it's stunning that like someone like that's not going to be around anymore. Cause I've never known hardcore or we've never known hardcore without him.
That's right.
Right. I don't think I saw any comment from him on this, but I wonder if it was satisfying for him and anybody and everybody in Leeway, to read the comments on, like, you know, I'm at this weird stage in my life. People send me Spotify links and I don't know what to do with them. I've become that guy that I hated who listens to ultra compressed, terrible, YouTube videos, for music. And
so you're 19-year-old.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And
right.
The comments on my Desperate Measures listen, it's a lot of, hey, Turnstile owes this band a ton. That's a constant callback in the comments. And you know, when people talk about Turnstile, they talk about, oh, you know, you can kind of, there's bad brain riffage and there's, you know, a willingness to experiment that maybe you could see Burn and you could see Quicksand, though not in tone. You could see like some of the willingness to go certain places. But Leeway, I mean, Desperate Measures, shit. It does sound an awful lot like Turnstile at places.
Some of the early Turnstile has like straight up like, yeah. Oh, it's like a Leeway riff.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
right.
Yeah. Like and, almost note for note. Like,
and I wonder if fellas who, you know, Leeway, as you said, they, I believe they claimed that, that they were hobbled by label stuff and yeah. That's certainly a thing. I wonder if they look at something like Turnstile with kind of just a warm feeling that, oh, you know, like whatever small hand I had in that, those kids can go on and have, you know, they can feed a family on borrowing a little bit from the model that I helped put down. That's a nice feeling. Cause I know I would certainly feel that way, about something that sounded like one of my bands and went to a larger audience. I'd say, oh, you know what, you know,
while you're struggling.
Well,
when you feel like I can't say I don't know that feeling, but like, I can't say that I would be like, oh, that's cool, man. Like those dudes are millionaires. Oh, fuck. I got to pay my cable bill.
No, you know why not? I'll tell here's the thing. If they were my contemporaries, 100%, I could see feeling away. But when it is past the time that you, when you couldn't do the thing now, if you wanted to, it's in the rear view. Like you're not at your peak. I think you just got to look at the next kid and go, oh, that's nice. I wish I had written that part. You know what I mean? Like I hope that's where Leeway or really any of the bands that kind of, you know, that like all the kids that are playing in bands right now who have an opportunity to buy a house off of music and everybody, this is not we try not to pocket watch on this podcast. So we won't do that right now, but there's just a few bands that are doing better than any of us really could have expected for years. And certainly I think much further along than any member of Leeway could have imagined with borrowing similar sounds, you know?
Yeah.
And to look at it and just feel a sort of, like obviously there's probably a novelty aspect where you go, that's interesting. And then there's probably some self-reflection where you go, I wonder if it could have happened for us. And then probably some kind of, you know, realization that no, it wasn't the right time. Yeah. You know, right. And,
but you still have that to like show your niece.
Yeah, precisely.
You'd be like, hey, you know what? That band you went to go see, look at this interview. They mentioned your uncle.
I saw an interview, a snippet with Riley talking about what an influence Leeway was on him. I mean, that's one for the nieces and nephews that who are probably, you know, stage diving at a Power Trip show at some point.
Sure, of course. I just wish they would have gotten their stuff together because now Michael Gibbons has also passed from Leeway.
Right.
Like there has been such like drama over the last, I don't know, 10 years more. Sure. And, you know, Eddie was able to put together like insane musicians, like to back him up. And play as Leeway, but it just sucks that like we never had a chance to have like that one last fucking, you know, Desperate Measures like lineup or whatever.
Yep.
Whether it was like AJ, Mike, and Jimmy and Pokey and Eddie, you know what I mean? They just like, and I think that probably affects them a lot too, to kind of be like seeing all this love and adoration for the band and realizing that like, probably something relatively minor and dumb, like kept them apart.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that kind of sucks.
So I don't know any of the, and I don't know
the background. I got to be honest with you, but like, I know they don't get along, you know, they didn't get along and who's putting up the records without the other people, you know, approving and all this. I mean, it was all, you know, what a lot of older hardcore folks do. They're fighting over, you know, a square foot of ground.
Yeah.
Oh, but like, well, you're not making any money.
Yeah. You know, Tom, it's very funny because not to take this away from the Eddie conversation. And Bob, I'm sorry if I've just soliloquy.
This is perfect. This is good.
But you know, Tom, you're an interesting fella in this respect because you've kind of lived it. You've been in a band that has excised you, then taken you back
twice.
I didn't want to rub it in, but
dozens.
But it's interesting because you feel some obligation. You know, these are conversations that we have off air, but you feel some obligation to do it the right way, and
sure.
Not have people that either have loved your bands for two decades or have. Might potentially get into your band, and you don't ever want to let down the old people, or and you don't ever want to project a feebled version of yourself to the young people.
Right. For many reasons.
Yeah. For many reasons. And so, you know, I hope I'm not talking out of school here, but you have a brother relationship with your bandmates. So I don't think I'm going to say anything crazy, but you know, in a group chat, you'll just be like, yeah, this might be it for us. Fuck these guys. And I think it's interesting that that to me, like what you guys have going on is perhaps like one of the few healthy New York hardcore kind of ups and downs that exists, because I agree with you. Listen, we don't know everybody's backstory. Sometimes it's more serious than we know, but a lot of times it's exactly as you say, it's people fighting over small money while harming their legacy, Cro-Mags. And it is completely a waste of everyone's time. Also, I want to say this, unrelated to anything, and I'll let you speak on that if it interests you. But, I saw a kid in the grocery store today, looked like I was just about to be New York, a Spanish kid, a Hispanic kid, who skinny little dude, looked like a mall alt from,
right,
you know, the late 90s in most every regard. His girlfriend was a mall alt. They were kind of adorable in their mall altness. It struck me as high probability Deftones fans, right?
Oh yeah.
But the kid was wearing
somehow Cro-Mags. Racist, I think. I feel like
I understood after I said it. But
yeah, right.
the kid was wearing a Cro-Mags shirt, and size small Cro-Mags shirt. And yes, I did. But
good work.
It was fascinating to me. And listen, the Cro-Mags don't need my advice on anything, nor would they take it. But
I mean, they probably could use your advice on certain things.
That might be true. But what I was going to say is there's still. Your sound is eternal. There's still kids that will be interested in what you do if you conduct yourself the right way. And I know everybody's got these problems that have got nothing to do with me, and it's presumptuous to jump in. But like, I don't know. The kid I saw today, he doesn't care about all the bullshit. You know, he just knows that this band has hard riffs and the hardest imagery he's ever seen. You know what I mean? And he's just like, okay, I'm in. I don't know. I agree with you, Tom. I wish that bands would kind of sort it out whenever possible.
Yeah. And like some of it's beyond, you know, just beyond,
sorting.
Beyond sorting, yeah. But I got to imagine though, for the most part, like, you know what I mean? Like, did you steal someone's spouse? Did you like, give them a disease that that's uncurable? No. Okay.
Right.
I mean,
even stealing spouses, who was it that attended each other's wedding? Was that like George Harrison
and Clapton? Literally wrote a song.
Yeah, Harrison and Clapton. Is that right?
Right. Layla is about George Harrison's wife.
Right. Just, you gotta, at some point you gotta let it go. If everybody's doing well, let it go. You know what I mean?
Did you ever hear, speaking of, this is a total tangent, I think it's appropriate because Eddie was a huge baseball guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear about the ball? This is the 60s or 70s. These two teammates literally traded families.
Oh my God.
Because the guy just died. Hold on. Let me pull up the name.
Sounds like a supremely 70s thing to do.
Yeah.
But they were like, it wasn't even like, all right. So One of the guys was Fritz Peterson, which is a very 70s name.
Yeah.
Yep. Who famously swapped wives and families with teammate Mike Kekich in 1973. So they ended up being like, you know, I like your family. That's cool. I like your family. And they traded like wives and children.
Wild.
And not in like a key party way, in a like.
Yeah, like this is taking swing to a real different level.
Right. But like apparently the Peterson guy who just died like a month ago, married the woman, you know, the new wife, mm-hmm. and like stayed together until he died. And then the other guy broke up with the other wife within a year. But I thought
that was draft picks with the trade, or that was, you know, it was straight up bummer.
A conditional second rounder in the 25 draft.
If the marriage only lasts a year, you know, you get another kid down the line, you know.
But I just think like it's a reminder though, like that life is both very short and very long.
Mm. Yes.
And like if you can get over things.
Yes.
In the grand scheme of things, it's probably worth it, because there's going to be a chance that you're not going to be able to.
Yo,
and that's fucking terrible to think that way. But it's like, and maybe you know what? Maybe these dudes go to sleep, put their head in the pillow, don't think twice about it. And that's fine too. That's right. We don't know the ins and outs and how many times they, you know, had these fucking problems. Who knows? But like, I would imagine, you know, I can say I'm happier having gotten to experience certain things that I wouldn't have experienced if I didn't
mend the
accept
fence,
people back in my
wounds,
life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I think it's an important thing, and it's a life lesson that you can learn, you know, learn out of terrible situations like this, that it's not that fucking deep, man. It's probably not worth it. You may never want to play again.
That's right.
But you should probably, you could be friends.
Well, or just neutral. You can bring things to zero and it's totally cool and everyone feels better. And mortality has a way of hopefully teaching those lessons, if there's anything to say out of it, which is a sad thing. But I wish that for young people and old, when you were able to get over these small issues, not only is it good for your holistic world, the world outside you, but the world inside you. So work on that, folks. Shout out to Leeway, monumentally important. Did a lot for my life. I related to Eddie's words more than many bands, and you know, they weren't always serious. Sometimes they were funny, but they told a real story. And so RIP to Eddie Sutton.
Go listen to fucking Leeway and blast it loud.
Let's go.